Our guest today in the Global Observatory is Martin Kobler, Special Representative of the Secretary General for Iraq and head of the UN Assistance Mission for Iraq, known as UNAMI. He has been in this job since August of last year. Martin Kobler is a seasoned German diplomat with critical experience in the region he now works in. He is an Arabic speaker and served as Germany's ambassador to Egypt and to Iraq. He was also Deputy Special Representative in the UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, known as UNAMA. Martin, first of all, there have been a lot of foreigners meddling in Iraq over the past decade. How is the UN seen there by Iraqis? Are you another foreign force that they would just as soon have leave and go away? Or do people have a more positive impression of the UN than they did, say, of the U.S.?
Well, this is one of the major challenges. First of all, thank you very much for being here on your program. It's great to be here. Now, the UN has a problem to make itself known. Whenever I'm sometimes at checkpoints we are asked where we are from, we say, well, from the UN, and the people then at the checkpoint, they tend to answer, oh, yes, from the US. Then we, of course, see that we are not very much known. This is the first step, to make ourselves known. And then comes the question of those who know what we are, what we are doing, what is our image. We did a small opinion poll, an inquiry the other day, and we asked on the scale of 1 to 10, where does the UN stand and where do others stand? So the winners of this inquiry, they were tribal structures. They were the Marja'iyya in Najaf. They were the religious leaders of the country with around 8 on the scale of 10. Even Prime Minister Maliki and the government was with 5.6. And the UN was with 3.2. So the image, this was of course a frustrating kind of inquiry we had for myself and my colleague, but it was very encouraging because we have to do something to improve our image. Now, the UN has a history in Iraq, and sometimes we are told you are responsible. You are responsible for dead babies during the oil for food. You are responsible for much of the misery inflicted upon Iraq. Now, this is an image we can correct, and I think we managed over the last years, in particular from 2003 on, where 24 of our colleagues were killed in Baghdad, including the SRSG. I think this paved the way to the image of a new UN. And we try with communication means. We are on Facebook nowadays, we are Twittering, and we are using all the modern means for the urban population, in particular for the young population, to make ourselves known. The country team, agencies, funds, and programs are another contributing factor to do good things this time and not to be seen as paralyzing the country, but to work for the benefit of a country and for the people of Iraq as it is enshrined in our mandate.
Martin, you mentioned young people. Many of them have left. Many of them wish to leave. Something of a youth brain drain threatening Iraq right now. What are the reasons they give for wanting to leave?
Well, there are several reasons, although this we inquired, and I must say the problem of youth is very close to my heart, because our interlocutors are usually elderly men above the age of 60. And I constantly ask myself, also being around 60, where is the next generation? Where is the next generation? Are they living in the country or not? The answer is yes, they are living in the country. 50% of the country is below the age of 18. Every second Iraqi citizen of the 32 million Iraqis, 16 million people are young. Now, you put a very good question. Why do they want to leave the country? And this is something I always see in discussions, that the first question is, how can I go abroad? How can I get a scholarship to study abroad? Now, the reasons they give, there are three or four reasons. The first one is security, the physical security, the still existing terrorist threat. You cannot be sure whether you are back home if you go to university or whether you are not victim of a terror attack. Every day, 10 to 15 people still die on the streets of Baghdad. Now, this is, of course, much better in terms of what we have seen in 2006, 2007. where we had 800 people, 1,000 people dying per day. Now there are 10 to 15, but we all should have a zero tolerance on terror victims. Every one of them, be it man, woman, or child, dying by terror attacks on the streets of Baghdad in Iraq is one terror victim too much. Now, the security is one. The second one is the lack of job opportunities. There is not a good investment climate in the country. There is no private enterprise there which could bring the country ahead. There is a relatively bad still educational system in the country, universities with old curricula dating back to the 80s. And next point is the question of bureaucracy, corruption. That if you want to have a job within the public sector, which is still, unfortunately, I must say, the overwhelming sector offering job opportunities, you must have good relations, and there is a lot of corruption in the country. Now, all these are critical things one can quote on Iraq, but one should not forget that the country looks back to a very difficult past with three terrible wars, which left many people dead, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, and the 2003 events. On the other side, we have decades of sanctions before 2003. Also, this leaves the country economically and infrastructure-wise devastated. However, this is now, I hope, on a good way, but there is a lot of things which still have to be done. Abolishment of red tape, prosecution of corruption. Iraq is a rich country. It is not like Afghanistan, which is really a poor country where you need donors conferences. But in Iraq, you do not need it. There is money around, and this money has to be used in a good way for the benefit of the people. My appeal is, this is not strictly my mandate, of course, but my appeal is to the government, give private companies more space, reduce red tape, reduce bureaucracy, have a one-stop shop for investors. Because only private economy, be them from within or from without, they can bring the country ahead, offering job opportunities for the young population of this country. These are framework conditions the government has to create in order to stop the brain drain.
You talked about prosperity. When I was a reporter for the New York Times and in Iraq briefly in 2003, one of the big stories then, and it remained a big story for the years afterwards, was the need for the government to come up with a distribution of the oiled wealth program. They still have not, have they?
No, they have not. I was German ambassador in 2006 and 2007. And when I said goodbye to the then deputy prime minister, Barham Saleh, who was very active in the oil to promote the revenue sharing law and the oil and gas law, he said, "Oh, Martin, now we are closed. Next week it will go through parliament." I'm back in the mission 5 years later now with the United Nations head. The same law is on the table, the same oil and gas law, the same revenue sharing law is at the table. Nothing moved in the last 5 years. Now, we put a lot of energy in awareness that the revenue of this country has to be shared in a fair way. The revenue sharing of the country, which is a federal state, has to be cleared. Iraq is an incredibly rich country with huge resources, mainly untapped oil fields in the disputed internal boundaries. It's already today the third largest oil exporting country after Saudi Arabia and Russia, or Russia and Saudi Arabia. And I think it's very important to give investors the security that their international oil contracts are honored, and also to give the provinces the security what part of the wealth they get. I think it's on a good way. Now we have elections coming up, and during electoral times it's always a little bit difficult, as everywhere in the world, to promote things. But anyhow, I think the passing of the revenue sharing law is in a good way, and this is the entry point to bring peace to the country, because money and power are closely interrelated. If you solve the money problem, you can more easily solve the political problems of the country.
This matter of dividing and sharing brings me to my next question. We in the West have learned, particularly after the invasion of Iraq, of the split between the Shia and the Sunnis. I think equally important in your mind is the rift between the Kurds and the Arabs. Can you talk about that?
Well, Article 1 of the Constitution says that Iraq is one single federal state. It is a federal state with the autonomy of the Kurdish region, but this does not mean that the KRG and Kurdistan is an independent kind of entity within. People have to talk. And we have an increasing Kurdish-Arab rift at the time being. One should not forget that Iraq is now in the first year of its true independence after the withdrawal of the American troops, end of last year. From 1st of January of this year, a new era for Iraq started. There is no buffer in the disputed internal boundaries. There is a self-reliance on security. And also this cannot be solved overnight. But one thing worries me. This is the political stalemate and the inability of political leaders to talk to each other and to agree on the power-sharing formula within the state for now almost 1 year. And there is no progress. And unfortunately, Yunami and we are not able to be strong enough in order to convince the political stakeholders to sit together to bring their national agenda ahead. Now, if you have a stalemate, this is a way back to the past. It is not a way forward to the future.
You were there as Germany's ambassador from 2006-2007. And I know in going back now, 5 years later, you have found one phenomenon that's changed, and that is the incidence of sand and dust storms. Can you tell us about that, and what are the consequences of that for the country?
One of our joint projects with the agency's funds and programs is the combat of sand and dust storms. And this is something which is underrated all in the political discussion, and it is a little bit difficult to raise it to political awareness. Indeed, when I left in 2007, we had sand and dust storms from, let's say, November to March. It's something like the Khamsin in Egypt or other winds, which are only occurring at certain times. Today, 5 years later, we have an increase of sand and dust storms, plus the appearance of a dust haze all over the populated areas, which originate in Iraq itself. This is due to, number one, the climate change, but also due to environmental degradation, the absence of agriculture, that people leave, that all these areas are not being taken care of as they should. The sand and dust storms, the Minister of Environment of Iraq says, will increase in the next 5 years, will double in the next 5 years. Health hazards, but also economic problems. The airports are closed. Partly the roads have to be closed. And this does not affect Iraq only. The Iranians, they complain a lot about sand and dust storms generated in Iraq and reaching until Tehran. The Kuwaitis, they had to close their airports. There were 30 days where the air traffic in Kuwait was affected by sand and dust storms originating in Iraq. That's why it's very important, I think, to address these long-term problems. Now, the practical problem now is, if you say we have to combat you, everybody, international community, together with you, have to combat the sand and dust storms and say, this has time, this is long-term. But I mean, the Chinese philosopher said the longest trip starts with the first step. And if we do not start today, we cannot, because this is a generation project, we cannot reverse the trend of reducing the sand and dust storms in 10 years from now. The practical ideas, together with UNEP, Environmental Program in Nairobi, to create with real money huge green belts from Anbar province at the border of Jordan down to Karbala and down to the Kuwaiti border. Agriculture, palm trees, but sustainability. Nobody should exploit, no investor here should exploit the natural resources and the water of the area. That's why the participation of UN is very important. If you leave it to the investors alone, 20 years the water will be consumed and we are back to square one. That's why we try to bring together a regional group, and I'm just coming from Kuwait from a sandstorm conference arranged by UNEP and the Kuwaiti Ministry of Environment in order to tackle this problem. I think it's very important for the future generation, and one has to tackle it now.
Martin, finally, in the context of the very difficult years that Iraq has gone through, its contemporary history, how is Iraq doing?
Well, first of all, I feel very comfortable in Iraq because I see that from 5 years back when I was living last, the atmosphere is less tense. People are on the streets, they are going shopping, they are going to their educational institutions. The fear of kidnapping practically disappeared. Terrorist events, we have spoken about it, this still exists. But the atmosphere is much more relaxed in the daily life. And this automatically reflects, of course, on the cooperation with the interlocutors, with the many NGOs we are cooperating with, but also our relations to the government. So Iraq developed a lot, but as I said, every security incident is one security incident too many. We are trying together with our Iraqi interlocutors not only to tackle the political problems, but also the developmental problems the country have. Iraq has still 1.2 million internally displaced refugees. So UNHCR and other organizations, they have a crucial role now with Syria, of course, and the spillover and the refugee streams coming to Iraq. But also, we should not forget the many internally displaced, which have to be taken care of. And these are hundreds of thousands. The question of minorities, of course, is another political problem which we take very seriously because of our values, that we are advocating the rights of the weak and of the vulnerables. So there is a lot to do. But the spirit is constructive. Less constructive is the political stalemate. And I would wish that the people who are politically responsible from all political blocs, that they come together and they work for the benefit of their people in order to create the framework conditions that also their children can stay in the country.
Martin Kobler, thanks so much for visiting with us today in the Global Observatory.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here, Warren.